Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
It's the VC show. It's the VC show. It's the VC show.
It's the VC show.
Season 2, let's go. Show season 2, yeah, we back again. Got the world tuning in for show, so go and tell a friend. iHeart got me on the squad, I slam dunk the win, so go on there, kick your feet up so you can listen in.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
Hey, what's that show?
It's the VC show.
It's the VC show.
Season 2, let's go.
All right, welcome to the VC show. I'm your host, Vince Carter. March Madness has come and gone, but it was fantastic. A lot of great basketball on the men's and women's side. A lot of drama and playoff positioning happening in the NBA. And I'll be discussing that and a lot more with my special guests. So kick your feet up. The VC show starts now.
The lob. The fans got what they wanted.
Vincent reigns supreme.
Okay, my guest, highly decorated, a busy man that has his hand in a little bit of everything. He was Mr. Basketball in Virginia in 1990, McDonald's All-American, went to a college that's up the road from UNC, where his jersey, number 33, was retired. Two-time first-team All-American, All-ACC, ACC Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. Take your time, guys. I'm not finished yet. Consensus first and second team All-American, two-time NCAA champ in 91 and 92. I was like five that year. Co-rookie of the year in 95 with Jason Kidd. He was drafted third by the Detroit Pistons. Three-time Sportsmanship Award, which is an awesome award to have for those who don't know much about that. Seven-time All-Star with over 17,000 points. I don't know if he knew that. And the 2018 Naismith Hall of Famer. He's a part owner of the Atlanta Hawks, Baltimore Orioles, and the Orlando City soccer team, an analyst for Turner Sports and CBS, which did a fantastic job. Managing director of the USA Men's National Basketball Team, which I don't envy him. It's a tough job. Not at all. South Lake High School's own. Put your hands together for Grant Hill.
Oh, man.
What's up, man?
What's good, man? Hey, I appreciate that introduction. It's not often that Tar Heels say nice things about Blue Devils.
So correct.
So I appreciate that.
So understand how long it took me to get to write that stuff down, because I didn't know where I wanted to go with some of that. I was like,
That's funny.
So I figure I'd leave your college name out, you know, but I figure some people get an idea. You know, you think of UNC, you think of, you know, where are you guys going? But let's talk about it, man. First of all, you know, I saw you out in, obviously, in Phoenix, but man, you did a great job. I got a chance to listen to you for the championship game because I got up out of there. But how was it? I mean, how was it watching? Were you impressed with the players? And, you know, I think anytime you get to the Final Four, you know, you always have a Cinderella story, but yet the cream of the crop typically rise to the top. It sounds like a rap bar right there.
First of all, congrats to you. I know you were out there, you know, not as a casual spectator, but it was announced that you were part of the 2024 Hall of Fame class, and you'll be enshrined later this summer. So congrats to you on that and that announcement. Well-deserved.
Thank you, man.
I can't wait to hear your remarks when you are inducted later this year. That'll be great.
Hey, let me say this to you, since we're on that subject real quick, before we move into the March Madness. I have another appreciation for you because we had a general conversation about this in preparation of how it all works, what to expect. And like you said, I look at it like giving information to a rookie or a young man possibly getting drafted into the NBA. You can tell him what it's like, but it's nothing like experiencing it and going through it. And it was obviously better than expected, but I think the conversation we had helped me kind of be prepared and able to handle it a little better. And on that note, how was your experience going through, that phone call, you know, more so than the speech first, but the phone call? You know, we got our phone call on April 1st, which was April Fool. So I had to weed out if it was a joke or not.
Right.
But how was yours?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. April Fool's. So what people don't realize is that John DeLiva, who's the executive director of the Naismith Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame, he calls all of the finalists. So the finalists are announced at All-Star Weekend. And then from that sort of pool of candidates, they announce the class. And not everybody who made the finalist roster makes the last cut, if you will. And so he's calling you regardless if you make it or you don't make it. He's letting you know, hey, you got in, or hey, you didn't get in. And so for me, I got the date mixed up. I thought I had the wrong date. And so the funny thing was, I was actually calling a game during March Madness. It was an Elite Eight game in 2018, Duke versus Kansas. I told Jim Nance, I told Bill Raftery, I said, look, I might get the call during the game. And so actually during the game in the first half, the phone rang. I didn't recognize the number. So I answered it, and it was a telemarketer. And and so at halftime, I'm nervous. The game's over. Like, I'm getting on a jet. I'm flying to the Bahamas because it's spring break that week for my kids. So I texted John DeLiva, and I said, hey, man, like, you can call me whenever. Like, you know, I'm doing a game. Like, right now, it's a good time. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm supposed to call you on Tuesday. And so, you know, I was like, oh, okay. So I could relax now and actually call the game and not worry about this phone call. But, right, you know, it was a little different for me. I mean, everyone, you know, knew you were going to get in. And just your career was decorated, storied, all that you did. I had like three different careers in one. You know, I had a really good start, and you combine the 4 years in college and then the 6-7 years early on. And then I had, you know, years where I didn't play and I was really hurt and I just, you know, I couldn't get on the court. And that was a hard part, a dark part. And then the end, you know, I was more in a role player. I came back and I was healthy and I was able to contribute, you know, not at the level early in my career. So there was not that gradual decline that happens sometimes as we get older. It just was abrupt for me when I got hurt. And so anyway, I say all that to say, like, I didn't know. Like, I wasn't sure if it would really happen or not. And so Yeah, I remember. I was at the pool. I got the call, and you know, it was surreal. It was. I'm not an overly emotional person, but you know, I found myself, you know, slightly emotional in that moment. Just once I got the call, and then I hung up and just had a moment to process it and think about it. And so, yeah, it was incredible. It was absolutely incredible, but it didn't fully sink in. You know, obviously the Final Four came up that weekend in San Antonio and the announcement, happened. And then there's the lead up to the actual enshrinement ceremony. But honestly, it didn't fully hit me until I arrived in Springfield and got caught up in all of the activities around the enshrinement. Like, that's when I really felt it. And that's when it was real, you know. And I you know, everybody processes it differently, but that was sort of, for me, the initial emotion of the call. And then, you know, okay, getting back to reality, let's get back to work, let's call games, we got the playoffs, life, got to work on my golf swing, all these things going through my mind. But then when you arrive there in Springfield, it hits you. And it's something that, you know, the moment you're in awe of.
Did you have like jitters and nerves? And I'm not even talking about the day, you know, the actual day of enshrinement. Like you said, when you got there, did you feel yourself like jitters? I mean, I'm right now, I'm having like jitters and nerves, and like my hairs are jumping up just for the simple thought of like going through that process and hearing other people talk about it. It's just an unbelievable moment. Like, what did you feel like nerves like immediately? Because I know, you know. And I'm going to say game day, but I know enshrinement day, speech day, there's another level of nerves and excitement.
Yeah, well, you know, I, first of all, I had been to enshrinement before. I had been to like maybe three enshrinement ceremonies. So I had been able to take it all in, had been there, had seen, you know, the dinner the night before, and then the actual, you know, the actual program where the inductees get up and share their remarks. And so, you know, I think, you know, of course they wanted us to send our remarks in advance. And so I think in an effort to keep us under a certain time limit. and so, you know, I don't know if I fully prepared. I think I wrote my speech out before I got there. And I think the thing that worried me the most was what I would say, because it's hard to sort of just encapsulate an entire career and all the people who impact you, all the people who've touched you, who've inspired you, who helped you along the way, and do that in, you know, 8 minutes. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
And so they told me I was going first, and they were like, we got a time limit. We want you to keep the speech at 6 minutes. And so I probably kept my speech at about 8 minutes. And that's probably a little bit of a regret. I wish I could have said a little bit more. But, you know, I really just kind of went through a chronological order. And from the time I started playing, who were the people who inspired me? You know, I had as my presenters, I had Pat Ewing at Georgetown. I first, you know, fell in love with the game of basketball watching Georgetown versus North Carolina. And in the 82 NCAA championship game. Yeah. And so became season ticket holders at Georgetown, watched every game at home for Pat Ewing from his sophomore through senior year. And of course, you know, I'll confess, I was a Carolina fan too from watching that game. But I had Pat Ewing as a presenter. You know, I had Coach K. You know, obviously he was a Hall of Famer, his impact, his influence. I had Isaiah Thomas. You know, Isaiah was someone who, when I was young, I was sort of chasing him and chasing his legend. And it kind of inspired me and motivated me when I was in Detroit to strive for something, you know, strive for something that, you know, that was, you know, to me was excellence. And so, and he was always good and always kind to me and supportive during those Detroit years and even afterwards. And then Alonzo Mourning, you know, Alonzo Mourning was also a presenter, and that might have been an odd one, but and we were certainly adversaries, and we had our moments, you know, back in the '90s.
Right.
But you know, his medical challenge and going through with the kidney issue and having to fight through and get back and play, as I was going through my own stuff, like that inspired me. And that inspired me how he was able to push through, find a way and resume his career and seem to have peace of mind, even though he might not have been at the same level he was at prior to that illness or that diagnosis. So, you know, it was identifying like who were those people who inspired me at different moments of my career and my life. And then, you know, just talking about, you know, when I first started playing and the coaches and, you know, one thing I realized, I played 19 years in the NBA and I played 4 years in college. I didn't have the time to thank every teammate. And we would still be there if I went through. So I made it a decision to not thank like single certain people out, but to thank all my teammates. But just went through coaches, went through doctors, trainers, family members. And I think because I was prepared and I kind of wrote out what I was going to say and I knew where I was going, like I was actually looking forward to that moment. The nerves calmed for me, you know, knowing once I knew what I was going to say. But you're still, it's the same like calling games. It's the same like before you play, you get that anxiousness. You get that, you know, it's hard to put in words what that feeling is. Mm-hmm. And that feeling was definitely there, you know, as the enshrinement ceremony began and the lead up to it. You know, that was, it was like almost getting ready for a game. And that sounds crazy, right. But it was an incredible moment. And it was one that the only regret is just, you know, don't put a time constraint. You know, I shouldn't have put a time constraint on, you know, on what I wanted to say or how long I wanted to say it. And if I could do it over again, I might talk just a little bit longer than what I did.
I'm sure Mr. DeLiva and Colangelo hearing you right now is like, no, Vince, don't listen to him.
Right.
But I received the phone call on that first and I went outside because I'd seen video, obviously of, you know, multiple Hall of Famers receiving that phone call. And around a lot of people, which is, you know, that's just all well and good. It's just, I don't know. I just felt like, well, it was April Fool's. So I didn't want to have a bunch of people around and it's a joke. You know, that's like a, you know, that's not really what's up. So I was outside and just kind of took, you know, enjoyed the moment, still tried to figure it out. And once, you know, realized what it was and had my moment, it was kind of just like a crazy feeling. And like you said about, you know, it's now a thing, you know, I feel like reality is coming later, but it's a thing now. Like, okay, I got the phone call and I'm it in every step of the way. So, you know, it got leaked out a day early prior to the following day. So prior to everything and that Saturday at the press conference and the revealing on game day, it was already kind of out. So it still didn't really hit me. I think, you know, I'm gonna be honest, it really hit me more than anything. When I walked into the room to start getting fitted for my ring and my jacket.
Yeah.
You know, you walk in and you know, it's like you hear about Niagara Falls and then you get to go see it and you're like, oh, so that's what they were always talking about. It's kind of one of those things, you know, it's like the wonders of the world. When you finally see it in person, you're like, oh, so that's it. I finally got to see that wonder of the world. And I think that was kind of how it was. I got there the night before, whatever. But it was until I walked in and that orange jacket to try on was right there. You see Basketball Hall of Fame, you see the jersey with the 24, the name on it. And then after you do that, do the quick interview, then you go and sit out and then you're sizing with the ring and you see the different rings from other, from past years. And you kind of like, whoa, this is not a joke. This is real. And you go through that. And then obviously the revealing and the press conference. And I'll tell you another awesome moment was kind of sitting at the press conference. It wasn't one of the revealing that I did with Billis and those. It was more so the press conference when you're sitting there with the media and you're now talking about it and kind of going through like the phases, like you said. I think that's when it started to hit me. And then obviously walking out at halftime, was pretty cool. So it's slowly getting there. But like I said, I guess my excitement, I have such an appreciation for what the Hall of Fame means and who's in it and the honor. I think that's where my excitement and emotions come from. So it's, like I say, every time I talk about it, I still get the chills, like it's just happening again already.
Well, you know, you touched on something it made me realize, like, I don't think I really had a chance to really feel it, because like I'm prepping for the Final Four as a broadcaster. And so I missed out on some of the things. I remember the ring sizing and getting the jacket, but like, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, Villanova and UNC and, you know, Jared Berry and, you know, excuse me, Joel Berry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Theo Pence. Like I'm like, you know, you're getting ready and it's a big moment. And so it was hard for me to, I think, truly feel the moment, of, you know, all that comes with the announcement. I think for me, I felt it as you described how you felt. Like, I really felt it once I got to Springfield, once I arrived.
So that's that next level. Oh,
yeah.
I can't wait. Yeah. Can't wait, man. I can't wait just to go through it. It's kind of, it's like I say, it's cool. You think of, you know, people ask me, like, you know, as a high school kid, let's just say, or middle school kid, you dream of being a professional basketball player. We don't think about Hall of Fame until like the back end of your career or when you're finished and now it's thrown your way. I never thought about it. I was like, I wanted to be, you know, obviously for me, I wanted to get drafted and be a professional player. I wanted to win a dunk contest. I wanted to possibly be rookie of the year, you know, play for a championship, maybe win a championship, you know, all of these different things, score a lot of points, hit game winners, all of these things you dream of as a kid into your adult. For us, we played late into our 40s,
right?
You know, so, you know, as an adult or just as an athlete in general, you know, you all of these things you want to accomplish that it's never thrown your way, and kind of, I guess, how you said it is for me as well, which I think heightens my appreciation for being there. You know, I didn't win a championship, I didn't get to play for one, but at the same time, you said something to me the first time we talked. He's like, you said, you know, you wondered what, you know, you being a Hall of Famer, but what did I do to deserve it? But at the same time, you said it all came to fruition. Like, he was like, but I did deserve it. And sometimes you have to kind of go through it. And I was in that position. It's like, yeah, I look at some of the greats in you know, icons in the Hall of Fame right now. And sometimes I'm like, man, do I belong here, you know, with this group? And then, you know, I'm just very thankful. And I think that's where the emotion and appreciation for being in this position today comes from.
No, I mean, look, I think what I've learned is interesting hearing you say that. Like, sometimes we don't see what everyone else sees. And, you know, I'm like, come on, Vince, it's a no-brainer. Like, you know, and I get it. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, Vince Sanity. I remember your great years in New Jersey. I mean, you had a pretty awesome run, you know, where you were, you know, as good as anybody in the league. And, you know, I also remember, you know, you at the end, you know, and you kind of being a role player and being a, you know, veteran influence and veteran voice in the locker room and still able to go out there and be productive. I think sometimes we only remember what we experienced last. Yeah. We forget like the totality of the whole thing. But, I also think, and I told you this once, we were playing golf or something, but I don't know if this speaks for you, but I know it spoke for me, that you spend a lot of time focusing on what you didn't accomplish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I didn't win a championship. I didn't win an MVP. I didn't do these things that, you know, were realistic goals and things that, you know, if things went a little bit differently, maybe could have happened. You know, you and I think we were on that trajectory. We could have been MVPs. You know what I'm saying? It just didn't happen or whatever. And that may not have been a goal. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, when you get that call and when you are inducted into the Hall of Fame, everything you didn't do or didn't accomplish, it's almost like it cleanses you of that. Like, you just, like, at this point, it doesn't matter, because you ultimately are validated, and you're validated because you're in this rarefied air with, you know, I think there's only maybe less than 200 people in the Hall Basketball Hall of Fame. And that's, you know, I don't know the exact number, but
that's crazy.
And after all these years, like, you're in there, and it just kind of just, it's like, you know what? It's the ribbon on your career, but it's also just, it makes everything good. You know, it's like, okay, this is, and, you know, and it's funny, man, because you talk about it, like, I think back to when I was a kid or when I first got to high school. And of course, yeah, I dreamed of playing in college and I dreamed, you know, oh, I'd love to play in the NBA. But with all that's happened, the really good and even some of the misfortunate, I don't know if I dreamed big enough to do what I ultimately did. And so I often sometimes would remind myself, like, man, when I was a kid, like, what were my big dreams, you know? And like, what happened far exceeded what I dreamed of doing.
Correct.
And so it's like, you know, the game has been so incredible to both of us and countless others. Yeah. And I think it's a moment to really reflect and appreciate sort of the game, what it's brought you, the doors it's opened, the people you've met, the people who've guided you and helped you along the way. It's a powerful moment. And I think you feel it either leading up to it, but definitely in the moment, if you will.
Yeah. And it's crazy you say that because, you know, in my mind, I said, man, I want to play 14, 15 years because, you know, one of the greatest players that ever laced them up, Michael Jordan, did that. So I'm like, if I can play 14, 15 years, I'm doing okay. And then got to 14, 15 years, like, man, I could keep going. And I took the challenge regardless of the role that I had. You know, I wanted to take the challenge of still being able to play the game that I love for as long as I can. And I was able to walk away because I wanted to, not because I had to. You know, there's a lot of people, as you know, that don't get that opportunity, whether it's not getting a phone call to play again or injury or whatever the situation may be. I chose to retire and walk away from the game. And I'm truly blessed and thankful for that. So you're right. You're right, Grant. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I am, like I said, I'm truly, you know, honored to be a part of this. And like you said, you know, maybe I've done more than I feel like I've accomplished and has touched other people's lives through this game of basketball. And, you know, like I said, I have appreciation for it. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode.
and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hopping back to the tournament real quick, like, what did you take from that tournament? You know, I thought, for me personally, I thought we saw a lot of kids who made an unbelievable name for themselves, whether they stay another year or go pro. You know, look at somebody like NC State, who, you know, if you watch ACC basketball, like we do, you know, NC State didn't have a wing in the prayer, in my opinion. And they went on an unbelievable run, knocked us all out to see themselves in the Final Four. You know, obviously they ran into a darn good Purdue team. And, you know, what were your takeaway from this Final Four? What from this tournament in general?
Well, first of all, the Wolfpack, they did have an incredible run. And they beat you guys once. They beat us twice.
They beat us twice, yeah.
on that run.
No, that's once. You're
right, they
once.
Beat you guys in the ACC Finals, and they beat us in the ACC Tournament and in the Elite Eight. But, you know, what I like, and you know, you and I, we're primarily in the world of the NBA, and that's kind of where we work and kind of our sandbox, if you will, even though, you know, we follow our respective schools in the college game. But it's really cool to helicopter in to the college game at the right and the most exciting time of the year. I think the storylines, the thing I enjoy is the preparation and, you know, learning and taking a deep dive to really kind of learn and understand these teams, their journeys, the individual players, not just their tendencies and style of play, but their backgrounds. You know, we get to spend time with these kids. We get to interview them between games each weekend. And you find yourself, as you go further and further with these teams, you start pulling for all of them because you like them. You know, even when Carolina, you know, went through, I think they lost in 17 to Villanova and then came back in 18. I spent a considerable amount of time with those kids. And I know the heartbreak they went through the year before. And then they come back and you know, they're all back and they're determined. And you pull for them. You want to see all these kids experience what I was so fortunate to experience. And I know that's not popular in Durham with my Duke faithful to say that. But, yeah, I was happy for those kids at North Carolina that, you know, they were able to redeem themselves and come back and win a championship. So with all of that said, UConn, I mean, their dominance. Dan Hurley can really coach, and how he has taken two separate teams, two different teams, different personnel, and has been able to get there and win and do it in dominant fashion. I loved the Zach Edey story, you know, 2-time National Player of the Year, one of the most dominant figures in college basketball in recent years. He came back. And after being, you know, ousted in the first round last year by Fairleigh Dickinson as a number one seed and leading his team and playing just heroic basketball up until the finals when they obviously ran into UConn, the State story. I mean, it's just, you know, TJ Burns, you know, I mean, the whole world fell
both
in love
DJs,
with him.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think both DJs, you know,
both DJs and how they just played loose and free. And, you know, the coach, Kevin Keats, I mean, he was on the hot seat. I mean, they were probably going to fire him. And, you know, for him to not only win the ACC, it triggered some bonuses, it triggered an extension on his contract, but to get to the Final Four, you know, you hope for him that now, you know, there'll be transfers and there'll be, you know, recruits that want to play for him. They saw how they played. They saw the freedom and the toughness and the excitement that they played with. And so, so there's just a number of great stories that happened throughout the NCAA tournament. Alabama, you know, how they played, and you know, obviously they beat you guys in a tough game. But you know, in the NBA, you know, you have a best of seven series.
Yeah.
And most times the best team wins. The best team might be off for one game. They might even be off for two games. But usually the best team is going to win four out of seven. But in the tournament, the best team doesn't always win. And you can have, you know, foul trouble. You can have an off shooting half. You know, things could just may not go your way. A team could get hot that you're playing against. And lo and behold, you know, number one, number two seed, a favorite, a better team for the most part can lose. And I think that's what makes it exciting is that it's one and done.
Are you low-key talking about us right now?
I feel No. I mean, we lost to an 11 seed in the Elite Eight. You know what I mean? But I mean, look, every year there are upsets, there are bracket busters, and there's buzzer beaters. And it seems to happen every tournament like clockwork.
And that's why everybody tunes in.
That's why everybody tunes in. Yep.
And I say that, you know, and I know a lot of kids are leaving early, one and dones or whatnot. And obviously, the transfer portal is what it is right now. You know, we at Carolina are going through that. And I wish Seth all the best. I want to throw that out there because he's great, comes from a great family. I just think March Madness, regardless of the men's side, not as having as many superstars, still had a lot of eyeballs and people really excited about the moment. That's the one thing about college basketball more than anything else is that you're loyal to your school. So if your school is there, your fandom is going to take over and obviously go to another level as opposed to the NBA sometimes. You know, your team's not winning for a couple of years and, you know, people hop off the bandwagon somewhere else. It's not really like that in college as much. And I think that's what makes college so great, which brings me to the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the storylines and just the viewership and just everything about it has been next level. The women's game, we don't see one and dones. You know, so you're getting that superstar for 4 years, 3 to 4 years. I'm assuming, you know, what, 4 years now, 5 years for right now. And it's just great to follow. And obviously Caitlin Clark and what she did was unbelievable. But I'm going to shift my attention to Dawn Staley. Mm-hmm. And I say that because her record in 3 years is insane. And I don't think it gets talked about enough, you know, and it's no disrespect to anybody else, but I just think that's an unbelievable record. I think it's an unbelievable feat for what she accomplished this year, going undefeated and finishing with the championship, because we've seen over years teams go undefeated and don't get the job done after what has happened to them last year, to the team that they lost to last year. So I'm sure there was extra motivation. But I know you were busy, but did you get a chance to watch any of the Final Four or any of the women's side in basketball this year?
Yeah, no, I mean, I did. I got a chance to watch, and certainly congratulations to Dawn Staley and you know, her team, the Gamecocks. I mean, just to do what they did in a very competitive women's basketball landscape. It's, you know, I've known Dawn since we were in college. She was at University of Virginia. And her resume, I mean, you know, she's going to be a two-time Hall of Famer. I mean, she was, you know, National Player of the Year maybe 2 years in college.
Yep.
She was a multiple All-Star in the WNBA. I think she played in three Olympics as a player and won three gold medals. And then she's coached in the Olympics and won a gold medal as a coach, maybe two gold medals. I'm not sure. And you know, and this won, you know, multiple championships. I mean, she's, you know, look, first of all, she's amazing. She doesn't get enough credit, doesn't get enough, you know, of her flowers, if you will. But the college women's basketball game and just women's basketball in general, like it's at an inflection point. Like it's at a point now where there's more eyeballs now on the game.
Yes.
And that's for a number of reasons. And look, when Dawn played and Lisa Leslie and Cheryl Shroop, Cynthia Cooper, like they were some incredible basketball players. And there was some incredible basketball being played that back then. But they didn't get the interest. They didn't get the eyeballs. They didn't get people watching. Now we're starting to see that. The WNBA Finals, you had Las Vegas, the Aces versus New York Liberty. There was real excitement. There was great viewership. You see it the last few years in college basketball. Obviously, Dawn Staley, LSU last year, Iowa with Caitlin Clark. The numbers don't lie. And so I feel like it's taken a minute, you know, it's taken a minute for the women's game to really catch on and become popular. But I think we're here. And I think you'll continue to see the game ascend on the women's side. And I think that has, it'll have an incredible impact on revenue, on player salaries, and a whole bunch. And so it's well deserved. And I'm excited for, you know, as a girl dad, I'm excited for these women and future young women who have inspirations and have a league where they can come in and pay it forward. And so I'm really excited about the state of it.
Absolutely. And they're definitely opening the doors for the next young star who is now growing up, watching and dreaming of being in their position. So, yes, I think women's basketball in general is in a great place, not even a good place. But you at college, take me through your recruiting process. You know, we're talking about college basketball. Well, let me first say, can Grant Hill, you now imagine what 17-year-old Grant Hill would have made in the NIL world today with obviously, you know, we read your accolades and everything that you guys accomplished in 91 and 92. Can you imagine yourself being in the NIL world today?
I mean, yeah, I can't imagine, you know, I think we all would have done well. I mean, particularly the high profile programs that you and I played at. And then just our games and, you know, and just, you know, how we played. Like, I think it would have been exciting. I know when you were in school, you know, Carolina was on TV all the time. And I'm sure it had great ratings, as, you know, did our teams. And so, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine. I also know that it probably would have been very, very different than what I experienced. Not necessarily in the results, although it could have been. But, you know, I don't know. There was something about, you know, as much as I feel and I'm pro player and I think we're going through a change right now, and sometimes it's uneasy, sometimes to some it's painful, but college sports is going through a transformation. And part of that is players now are being able to, you know, profit off their name, image, likeness. And some could say it's you know, it's semi-professional, if you will, with the transfer portal. But it would have been very different. But I know for me, and I can't speak for everybody who I played with or every contemporary of mine, like I enjoyed my experience. I enjoyed what I went through. And I also enjoy the fact that, you know, you didn't have social media. You know, you didn't have the noise and, you know, somebody plays poorly and people going at them on Twitter or whatever. You know, we were kind of isolated from all of the noise, you know, and
we had our school paper and the Charlotte Observer.
That's it. I mean, we had the school newspaper and, you know, the Charlotte Observer as well. So, you know, you didn't, you know, and even then, like the newspaper was, you know, there was a vetting process. They had an editorial board, like, you know, they may say, hey, Grant Hill didn't play well, Vince Carter didn't play well, but it wasn't personal, you know, and it wasn't. And so, you know, it's just a different time, and this generation is different, and what they've experienced prior to arriving on campus is much, much different than what you and I experienced. But I, you know, look, I do think of, man, like what that would have been like and how crazy it would have been.
I cannot imagine. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, man, you wouldn't have been able to tell me nothing.
Right. You know, that's just so crazy. Let me ask you a question. Were you ever a pitcher or a quarterback?
No. I was around football and knew how to throw a football pretty well, but I never played organized.
But you never played. Okay. No. The reason I asked that, why you? Why did Coach K choose you for the inbound play for that big shot in that big moment? Because I would put you as a receiver, as an athlete, right. I'm putting you somewhere where I can throw it up where you can go get it as well, you know. So
right.
There's another option to that, but why you?
Coach K is a very wise man. No, I'm joking. he is a wise man. He is a wise man. No, look, so really, I think, so we used to do two-man drills to start practice. And, mm-hmm. You had a partner. You know, one of you gets the rebound, you outlet it, and you kind of run the wing, and you go in for a layup.
That's so old school.
Boy. Yeah, and then you'd go down the court and then back. And then the next time you rebound it, you outlet it. Now you pull up, the guy hits you, you hit a little jump shot or you shoot a jump shot. You do that. And then then the next time you catch it on the wing, you throw it back to the person at the free throw line and they shoot. And so we'd go through a series of things that ended with a baseball pass. You start with the ball, the guy's free throw line extended and he takes off down the court and you want to throw the ball to where they catch it and they can just lay it in. Mm-hmm. And so I was always good. I could throw the ball. I was around quarterback. I was around football. I never played, but I always wanted to be a quarterback. And I would always brag, I'm talking trash. It's in the genes. It's in the genes. I make a great pass in practice. And it's in the genes. And so, but I always was at least the most accurate and those exercises that we did every day. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, it's my second year. And I even think we did it at the practice at the Spectrum the day before the game. We did that sort of warm up. So, I think Coach knew that I could throw the ball, three quarters of the length and at least,
get it in the vicinity.
Get in the vicinity. Yeah. And then Christian was unreal. And I mean, he hadn't missed a shot the whole game. I think he was 10 for 10 from the free throw line. And at that point was 9 for 9 from the field. And, people who are young, who maybe weren't there to really understand or experience those Duke teams, Christian was incredible as a college player. I mean, yes. Absolutely dominant. Yes. And and he did it against Shaq twice. He did it against Alonzo. He did it against the 3 7-footers in Arizona with the late Brian Williams and late Sean Rooks and Ed Stokes. He brought it every time he played. And so there was never any doubt because there were a couple of options that I could have done, but it was I'm throwing the ball to Christian. And
he already on fire anyway.
Yeah, he was on fire anyway. And so it was an incredible moment. There was a great moment, the huddle, leading up to the pass and the shot. Sean Woods from Kentucky hits that shot with, just a little bit over 2 seconds. And that was the first time that season that I thought, oh, we're not going to the Final Four. As I'm walking to the bench, spring break was the next week at Duke. And I'm thinking, well, I guess I'll be at spring break. And I'm thinking man, they used to talk about how great it was. I get a chance to experience it now. That's literally going through my mind. And Coach K was brilliant in terms of his leadership in that moment. And first of all, he didn't wait for us to come to the bench. He met us on the court. And he was very confident in that we're going to win. And I don't know if he believed it, but he sold it. He sold it to us in that moment. And then what he did, And how he went about it, he drew up a play and he said, look, Grant, can you make the pass? And I said, I can make the pass. And then he asked Christian, can you make the shot? And Christian said, hey, if he makes the pass, I'll make the shot. And literally, that's what was said. Now, the brilliance in that was that he didn't tell me to do it. He asked me if I could do it. And I took ownership. I said, yeah, I got it. I can do this. And there's something about saying it and saying it amongst your teammates in that huddle, in that moment. Yes, I can do it. And then, and then Christian, who was super confident and borderline cocky, arrogant, he's like, man, Grant makes the pass. I'll make the shot. Like, now I'm nervous again. Like, oh, man. Like, now I got
to make the perfect pass.
But, you know, when we exited that huddle, like, I believe that we were going to win. And in sport, you always have to have belief, even coming down to the last few seconds. And, you know, I did my part. Nobody was on the ball. You know, Christian, you know, he had to catch it. He took a dribble, did a little shimmy, and scored. And you know, it's been over 30 years, and people still remember it. People still talk about it. Even people who weren't even born, who've seen it on replay over and over again. So, you know, we were kids, man. I mean, we were just trying to win a game. We didn't understand the historical significance of that moment.
And mind you, the people who are listening, for those who know, Christian Laettner was not the most athletic guy in the world. So he had to hold off to get the ball. I mean, he didn't catch it at his high point, but he did a great job of holding off just to be able to get the ball. And then obviously gets to a shimmy move, just able to get that shot off high enough. And it was just like all net. And you, I mean, it was a confident shot. It wasn't any hesitation at all in that jump shot in that moment. And I think T. Hill, his reaction to it was top five. Cause I mean, that's why I asked why you and I'm curious. I would love to ask him. T. Lang. My bad. Wasn't T. Lang?
I think Lang was on the court, but T. Hill was the one that they captured.
That was T. Hill. That's right. So I just seeing, you know, him, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, because maybe there was doubt. Or is it just, obviously just amazing that he made, I don't know. It's just crazy to see everybody's reaction. You know, I mean, obviously your reaction is like, okay, I believe he can make it, but you never know until you actually see it.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. And you know, to me, that play sort of embodies like the joy and the heartbreak of sport and competition. And, you know, you have these moments, you have these, you know, game winners, you know, you have these, you know, sports pushes you to, you know, if I'm guarding Vince Carter and I'm really good at defense, I'm going to force you to do something incredible. You know, I'm going to force you to do something that you have in you, but you need someone to almost push you to
bring it out of you. Yeah.
To bring it out of you, you know? And so like, moments like that, like, you know, it could be Derek Wittenberg and the alley-oop to Lorenzo Charles against Houston. Right. You know, it could be, you know, Michael Jordan hitting that shot against Georgetown in 1982. Like you need competition, and you need like to be pushed by greatness. Greatness brings greatness out of you. And so that to me is sort of a moment of one, the heartbreak here. Kentucky thinks that they have the game won, but also, you know, doing the unthinkable and, you know, so, yeah, I mean, it was, I mean, I didn't, like I said, I didn't understand it when it happened. We were just in the moment.
Right.
But yeah. And then I don't think we had seen anything like that. Like, I can't recall throwing the ball to Link. I mean, I think we've seen examples since then, Bryce Drew and others, but like, I don't recall like, you know, throwing the ball the length of the court, 2 seconds. And like, what's on the line is a trip to the Final Four.
Right.
And so there was disbelief. Like, I was in I told you, I was thinking about going to Beach Week, going to Dirty Myrtle, you know, as we used to call it.
Yes, sir. I heard that a long time. The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code DKHOOPS. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code DKHOOPS, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, Help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You guys were able to beat a very good UNLV team that, you know, were rock stars.
Right.
You know, if you would. And you know, what was that like the leading up to the game? Obviously, you guys are Duke. You know, they're them. Like, I know coming out, I'm sure what was said is like, let's go shock the world. But leading up into that game, were you guys at a point where, you know, it's kind of like everybody playing the Fab Five, really, you know, as well. Were you guys had like, all right, let's go upset the world because nobody believes in us right now?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, the feeling that we had against Vegas in 91 was different than the feeling we had against the Fab Five the year later, but I'll get to that. So one of the things, that Vegas team who was so dominant, they had everybody back. From that championship in 90 where they, you know, it was the worst, you know, most lopsided win in NCAA finals history. And, you know, we lost three seniors from that team, Ala Abdennabi, Robert Bricky, Phil Henderson. And so we got better through the season. You know, we actually won the regular season of the ACC. We got smacked by you guys, Carolina, in the ACC finals. Like, y'all beat us by like 20, 25. But we kind of found our rhythm and our peak. We started peaking in the tournament. And, you know, we had Vegas, you know, in the semifinal. And unlike the year before, where we only really had one day to prepare, we had a whole week to prepare. And, you know, coach, like, Vegas was dominant. Like, they were, people thought UNLV could beat NBA teams. Like, that's how dominant they were. They were beating everybody. You know, you think UConn was dominant, which they were. Vegas not only destroyed everybody by 20 or more, they destroyed everybody in the regular season by 20 or more. I mean, they were that dominant of a team. And so, first of all, what we did was we watched the game from the year before. And we watched it and we saw that. And like, we didn't want to run from it. Like, we wanted to own it. Although I wasn't on that team, but we watched it.
And, so you're sitting like, oh man, I could have thrown with y'all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and so, you know, our guys, returning guys, Bobby Hurley, Christian Laettner, like, they were older, they were better at this point. Mm-hmm. I was there too. I mean, I played power forward, but I was also the backup point guard. So we had another ball hand. We had another pressure release, you know, against their pressure. And that, you know, I think was somewhat helpful as well. And then, you know, we just coach build us up. You know, we talked about how we'd been in close games all season. You know, we had won them. We had lost them. We practiced in the game situations all season. Vegas had never been in a close game, you know. And so our thing was, let's keep it close. Let's keep it close because the pressure is on them. And then we even did stuff where we scrimmaged 5 against 7, you know, to get used to just their speed and their athleticism. And, you know, I actually think we were not too far off in terms of athletic. It was a different team that year. We were pretty athletic ourselves, but like, we practiced against 7 people on defense. And, you know, going into it, we were confident. You know, and it's a funny story. I'll tell this story, man, and hopefully it won't be too long. But we get to Indianapolis. You know, we do all this stuff Thursday. We practice Friday. We're staying at a Holiday Inn hotel with, you know, all the Duke people. Parents are there. And so me and Tony Lang and Brian Davis and one of our managers, we go to the whole team goes to a mall. Or we go somewhere. We had a couple hours. And they had this karaoke booth or they had this karaoke store, and you go into a recording booth and you sing a song and then you could go record the video. So we go in there and we do Temptations and we do, you know, Prince 1999. They didn't have a great, you know, selection. So those were all great songs, but those.
Right.
So
that's the best. Yeah, they had. Yeah.
So we can't really sing, and we're in there singing, and then we make a video. And they give us the VCR tapes. So we come back to the hotel. This is the night before the game. And Tony Lang's dad, he would bring his VCR on the road. And he would set it up. He had his VCR in his toolbox. And he would set the VCR up and have it record the game. And then all the parents would go back to their room and watch the game after the game. You know, this is before, obviously, technology and all that.
Right.
So we come back with the tapes. And we're putting the tapes in to show our parents and everybody. Everybody's in there. And we're laughing. And the parents are looking around like, oh, they're going to get their ass kicked tomorrow. Like, literally, our parents are looking around. Like my mom and dad told me after the fact, they're like, oh, we just knew y'all were going to lose. Like, y'all out here making videos. And, you know, I guess it's the equivalent of TikTok and all that other stuff. But we're making, we're singing and making videos and all that. But there was like, there was a confidence. Like, we were confident and we believed in Coach K. And right away we came out and we kind of punched him early, and we just showed him that, you know, this is a different year. This is a different team. And, you know, things kind of went our way. We made the right plays and we were fortunate to win. But really the job was in the preparation, and that happened all throughout the week leading up to the Final Four.
So what was the difference between that one and Fab Five?
So, great question. So when we beat Vegas, it was almost like we arrived. Hmm. You know, we were like, it was like, it gave us like, it was almost like, it was like Tamiyak versus Shonuff and The Last Dragon, where you get the glow, like, you know, like, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, or like when Luke Skywalker, all of a sudden, like, you know, Yoda has been working with him, and then all of a sudden he's a Jedi. Like, it was just like instantly like, oh, we've arrived and we know what it takes. And we beat Kansas the next day or 2 days later for the championship and came back the next year. And we were pretty dominant. We came back. And another thing, this is another great moment. So the Kansas-Carolina game happened. And this is when Dean Smith like got thrown out, which is horrible that like the ref would throw Dean Smith out. Like it was, but. So we're in the hallway and we're getting loose while their game is ending. And then Kansas wins and coach brings us back in the locker room and basically says, Like, don't rationalize that Carolina loss. Because, you know, the rivalry between Duke and Carolina, because both schools are in close proximity to one another, the rivalry, like, it's almost like we can't let Carolina outdo us.
Outdo us, yeah.
Or we can't, you know what I'm saying? Like you could win a championship, but you lose to Carolina three times during the regular, during the season. It's almost like it evens out. You know, it's crazy as that. It was almost like Coach K was like, don't build in an excuse to lose because it's okay because Carolina lost. And which was an interesting moment. And but to your question. So the next year we came back, we were dominant. We were cocky. We went up to Michigan in December and it was before exam week. And it was before they were officially the Fab Five. I think Jalen and Chris and Juwan were starting and Jimmy and Ray were still coming off the bench. And, you know, we didn't respect them. Like, we didn't think they were going to be as good as they were. I knew Chris.
Or they're not ready yet. Right.
Yeah. We didn't think they were ready and they hadn't really played anybody of serious, you know, competition. So we kind of came out with a laissez-faire attitude. No, and it's not making an excuse, but like we didn't come like with our A game, and they brought it, and they almost beat us, and you know we got, you know, we had a missed shot. I got the rebound, tipped it out to Bobby. Bobby goes up for a three. This is like with 10 seconds left, and we're down three, and Weber runs right through Bobby. And, you know, he goes to the line. So we go to overtime. Chris fouled out and we win. And so we knew that if we saw them again, like we're going to have the appropriate fear, as Greg Popovich was saying. We didn't say that then, but we knew like, okay, we'll be ready. And,
yeah,
you know, and so when we saw them again in the finals, they obviously had improved. They were the Fab Five now. They had an incredible run. But, and this may sound crazy, it may sound cocky, like we knew we were going to win. We knew we were going to win. And we did. I mean, we ultimately pulled away and won by 20. But we were the Vegas now. You know, we were the team that everybody was gunning for. And so we knew what it was like the year before. And really that game was an eye opener for us. It was a good game to have as we were about to start the ACC regular season, that you can't overlook anyone. Just because you're back, you know, defending champions, you got to still come out and play.
Right.
And now we ended up losing to Carolina that year at Carolina. We were 17-0 going into that game. And we lost at Carolina.
Dang, but we stay breaking streaks, don't we?
My bad. Okay. Yeah, no, that's, you know.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.